Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. I'm Larry Jacobs, your host here on Education Talk Radio, and welcome once again to what I think is going to be one of our better shows. I love all of them, but this one is going to be just terrific because it's such an important topic. It's about educating military children, the children of the folks who so gallantly and without fail, I have to say, serve our country, not only here in the U.S., but all over the world, and the varied wars and actions and all that sort of stuff. And it's just so important. Educating military children is our topic today, and particularly the Commission on Educational Opportunities for Military Children. Our guest will be, in just a few minutes, the Executive Director, Brigadier General Norman Arflock, retired Brigadier General Norman Arflock. I wanted you to know that many of you I know listen live to our shows, but an even greater number listen to the archives. Our archives are always available at education on the web at www.educationtalkradio.wordpress.com. All of our shows are there, and all of our schedule is there, and then also all kinds of education news, etc. And you can go over there, educationtalkradio.wordpress.com, and this show, as all of them always are, will be archived shortly after we're finished doing our live broadcast today, which, by the way, is April 22nd, 2011. Today's show is sponsored by Herff Jones Nystrom for over 100 years, particularly in the social studies field, which I was in. Herff Jones Nystrom has been the leading choice for educators for all the social studies curriculum needs. Visit Herff Jones, that's H-E-R-F-F, Herff Jones Nystrom, N-Y-S-T-R-O-M, HerffJonesNystrom.com to learn more about all their products and view their special offers, especially and including their hot EdTech product. This is a great product. Stratalogica. Powered by Google Earth, Stratalogica is, and this is true, a revolutionary web-based product that delivers layers of curriculum-based content in a 21st century learning environment. It's incredible. It's being adopted by school districts and various independent schools, charter schools, parochial schools, whatever, all over the country. It is just great. Don't miss it. Visit Stratalogica.com, Stratalogica. Spelled it wrong. Let's do it again. Stratalogica, Stratalogica.com. We appreciate their sponsoring the show. You should go over there, Stratalogica.com or HerffJonesNystrom.com, and start your own free trial. General Arflack, I'm going to bring him on in 1 second, is the Executive Director of the Commission on Educational Opportunities for Military Children. And it is a 501, I heard you clear your throat, General, 501c3 organization located in beautiful, right near Keeneland, Lexington, Kentucky. Their website, please write this down so you can find out all the good stuff they're doing, www.mic, then the number 3, mic3.net. Good morning, General Arflack. How are you today?
I'm doing fine, Larry. How are you?
Well, I am just fine, as a matter of fact, and I can't thank you enough for being with us today. I'm so honored, A, to have you with us, and I mean that so sincerely, and I love what you're doing. I just want to say it, and it's so obvious. I don't know why I'm even saying it. The folks who defend our country and go from base to base and go all over the world doing all the things that they have to do while we sit home and go to the malls, and their kids need to be educated along the way, and that's what we're going to be talking about today. And it's almost a forgotten part of the education system, and that's why I am thrilled that you're with us today. So thank you very much.
Well, it's absolutely my pleasure, Larry. And I echo your sentiments towards what our great servicemen and women do for this country. And you're exactly right. All too often, we have a tendency to forget that as we sit here in our soft office chairs and take life as it is while they're out doing the things that they do to ensure our safety and our freedom. And it's just an honor for me to serve in this position.
Well, why don't you tell us just a little bit about, you're retired, but were you in the, let's go over this. Were you in the Army or Marines or Air Force? Where were you a general? Tell us a little bit about yourself.
I am a retired Kentucky Army National Guard guardsman. I was a career guardsman. I did 38 years. I started as a private. I concluded my I served in all levels of command up through the state hierarchy, and upon my retirement, I was the second in command of the Kentucky Army National or Kentucky National Guard, the deputy adjutant general. So I've been very fortunate. I've had a lot of good people helping me to get where I was, and I'm quite proud of my military service. And I would be remiss if I didn't say that my legacy is my father was a World War II veteran, and I now have a son who's a second lieutenant in the United States Army, of which I'm very proud, and an Iraqi War veteran. So it's kind of an RFLAC family tradition for military service.
Bless your heart. That's great, and we appreciate it. We appreciate your dad and that generation. We don't have to. It's been enough. Enough has been said. I don't know if they can say enough about that generation that went off and fought the war. And your son is an Iraqi veteran. Wow, that's great. Is he home now, or is he? Where's he now?
Actually, no. He's at Fort Benning right now, completing his officer basic course. He did 5 years enlisted service, and then decided he wanted to become an officer, and went to the Army ROTC program at Western Kentucky University, and was commissioned last spring, and is now at Fort Benning, and he will be finishing his basic course the 1st of June, and then his next assignment will be somewhere overseas.
God bless the guy. You must have been really proud of him when that happened, General Arflack. You must have been really proud.
Well, absolutely. Absolutely, you know? And again, like I said, it's just kind of a legacy, and we're trying to uphold a great tradition that my dad has established for us and a lot of other great soldiers, and hopefully he will be as fortunate as I was to move through the ranks and be another General RFLAC someday, maybe.
And to start from being a private to work your way up to that is just unbelievable. I didn't even know you could do that, so I really have to. Wow, that is incredible. That's just great. Okay, I want you to explain, because we want to talk about educational opportunities, your commission, for military children. There's a lot to explain here, so why don't we start with just the basic question. What does the commission do? What is it? What does it do?
Well, the commission is a national organization of states who have entered into a compact agreement to support the education of military children who are dependents of our military personnel. A compact agreement basically is an agreement between several states to and we draft a model compact that is provided to those states, which must be enacted in legislation in their respective states, and they agree to facilitate that process. And the intent of the commission, in the long and short, is not to create a special class of students by those being military, but it's to keep those special students from being disadvantaged simply because their parents have made the decision to support this great country and the armed forces.
Right, and actually, I was talking yesterday, and I sent you a note. I hope you looked at it yesterday. I had Susan Patrick, who's with the K-12 Online Learning Association called iNACL, and we were talking about that, how hard it is for a kid, a student in a school, suddenly, like your son, if he has children, he's in Georgia, and the next thing you know, he's assigned to a base in Oregon. The kid goes with, and all of a sudden, all the standards are different, and all the things that they were doing in Georgia are different in Oregon, and it's just I can see where it would be a nightmare, for goodness sakes. It's tough on the kids.
Well, it absolutely is, and don't be mistaken. Our military does a great job of taking care of our military families, and they try very hard. But as you said, and I have often said about my own family, you know, I signed on for this military service. They're here by default, and I brought them into it, and I owe it to them to ensure that every advantage is taken, that they aren't disadvantaged. And the numbers speak for themselves. An active duty family will move 6 to 9 times during that student's educational career in K-12, and two times, generally speaking, while they're in high school. So you can see the inherent difficulties there, not only with the educational process itself, but, you know, they're displaced from friendships that they've established and relationships that they've established in a particular community. So there's a lot more to it than just the educational piece, but you're exactly right. What we focus on is trying to level that playing field as you transfer from one state school system to another. That's exactly it.
And what I the one thing I don't understand, which I hope you can clarify for me, is I know that the Department of Defense, and I might be wrong here, I don't know, but I thought that the Department of Defense provided schools on the basis for the children of our military people. Is that what we're talking about, or are we talking about public school systems near those bases?
Well, it's a two-part question. You're exactly right. Many of the military installations do provide school systems, the DODEA school, if you will, Department of Defense Education, but so many of them don't. And we primarily, or the compact agreement is primarily for the public school systems within the states that don't have the DODEA school systems. Now, I will say, and in fact, we are in the process now of a memorandum of understanding agreement with the DODEA schools that they will do everything that they can to accept and facilitate the process as much as they can within what the limits of the law they are for them being a federal entity as opposed to which prohibits them from being a member of the compact themselves, but they have and are willing to work with the public school systems. But our primary focus is with the administration of the various public school systems in the states all across the United States.
And, you know, I never thought of this before, but I have to ask you, and you may not even be able to answer, General R. Black, but I have to ask, if a kid graduates high school on a base, and I'm just going to say Utah or any state, but I'll pick Utah, if they graduate in Utah, does their graduation, is it certified by the state of Utah, or is it certified by the federal government? If it's a DOD school,
and you're right, I don't know a specific answer on that. I would, and again, assumptions get us all in trouble. But I would clearly, if they are awarded a diploma in a respective state, I would think at least the standards for that state have been met. Again, though, those federal DODEA standards may vary somewhat from the individual states, as individual state standards vary, and that's. Again, the whole purpose of our existence is when those standards don't mesh and a student moves from one state to another, that we make every attempt to work that out and gain that parity for that student. And there are many variables, as you can imagine, as they do transfer from one state to another, that have to be dealt with. But I will say, in our member states, they have worked very hard to ensure that there is no disadvantage there. In fact, many were doing some of the things that we strive to achieve already before it was enacted into legislation and then becoming a member of the compact. So the heart and soul of the American public and especially the senior education officials is behind this program, and clearly we have to have their cooperation to make it successful, and they have been totally supportive in every aspect.
I can't believe anybody wouldn't be totally supportive in every aspect. It's the thing we have to do. It's one of the more important things. I count it, and I said this yesterday on our show with Sue Patrick, I count it as the same thing as providing quality health care for veterans. We have to provide quality education for their kids. It's that important. We can't let the kids go.
That's exactly right. And again, as in any situation, the kids are our future, and we need to ensure that they have every opportunity to be educated in like manner.
Okay. So give me quickly. First of all, I'm going to ask two questions. You can answer them in any order. How many states are now in the compact? And when and why was your group, the compact, established?
Well, we currently have 36 states. The just most recent was West Virginia signed legislation within the last month to become our 36th state. To answer your question, when and why were we established?
Yes.
I think we've addressed part of that already. But as early as 2006, the Council of State Government here in Lexington was working with various entities to kind of initiate this action. And then, quite honestly, as a result of several case studies wherein there had been some problems with students transferring some individuals, senior individuals in the military, and Department of Defense became interested in establishing a relationship that would facilitate this process. And then in concert with the Council of State Governments, as I said, here in Lexington, the actual planning process began. It was consistently worked on up through 2007, and then actually early late 2007, early 2008, I believe the compact came into being. The original agreement was because about 20 states hold a majority of military students in the United States. Once 10 states had agreed to become members of the compact, the commission would be formed. And at that particular point in time, the Council of State Government, through a memorandum of agreement with the commission, had some of their employees actively involved with the process of establishing the bylaws, the rules and regulations, and managing compact agreement with the various states until the commission saw fit to employ a full-time staff, which happened about a year ago. The 1st of May, actually, is when I came on board and we started to put our staff together. Another thing that I feel I need to say.
So wait, you're coming up on your one-year anniversary.
Absolutely, and okay, but the Department of Defense, again, as I said earlier, has been very critical in this operation, and they have had the lead in contacting states and working with various state legislators to get the legislation enacted through the legislative process and through the governor's office and everything that's happened. So. Even though your question about the DoDEA schools is not necessarily applicable to what we do, the Department of Defense has definitely had the lead in getting us to where we are today. And then as those states transition, we as an organization in the commission strive to establish the hierarchy within the state, which consists of a commissioner and who is appointed by either the governor, the superintendent of public instruction, or some senior state official, and then the establishment of the commission itself, the council within the state, which takes care of the business within the state. So this has truly been a collaborative effort between the Department of Defense, all the local public institutions of education, and then now clearly the commission here in Lexington.
Well, that it's great to see the collaboration happening. I just want to clarify this. Is there any reason why 14 states haven't come in? Is there any one given reason? Do they all have a base there or whatever?
No. States are individual entities, and they have their own thought processes in which they work. And there have been some questions about state sovereignty, some questions about exactly how much a compact or having an outside entity come in and trying to dictate how their state system might operate. So, but we are working actively with those states. We have some very positive things going on right now, obviously because it takes – legislative action in order for this to happen. We can only operate when their legislatures are in session.
Right.
That is a prime time right now. Many state legislatures are in session, and we do have active legislations in many of those. So being too forward-thinking, I think we'll see some more states coming on board, and we're very optimistic about that. And then those that still have issues, I'm willing to travel with the Department of Defense folks to meet with the legislators to work through any issues that they might have, or the respective governor's offices, or even the superintendents of public instruction, or the senior education official in those states. So there's just so many factors involved. It's a lot of moving parts and pieces, and a lot of questions to be asked, and I respect that. I want those state senior officials in those states to be comfortable with this legislation when they enact it, because again, it's very important that everybody understands the rules of the game and we're all working together on it.
Absolutely, and I just to reiterate, which I know I think everybody in our audience certainly is aware, but just to be on the safe side here, education, as we all know, is a state function, and that's where things kind of get mushed up there. But you have to we've just got to continually move forward in helping the kids of the military children. General Norman R. Flock, retired General Brigadier General Norman R. Flock, is our guest today. He's the Executive Director at the Commission on Educational Opportunities for Military Children, which is a 501c3 organization based in beautiful Lexington, Kentucky, just down the road from Keeneland Racetrack, one of my favorite places. And you can learn more besides the show at this website, www.mic, and then the number 3, mic3.net. Okay, so General Arfleck, when you go out there, who is your target audience? Who do you need to influence?
Well, clearly, who we are looking to and toward are those individuals that I just mentioned. And again, the Department of Defense is working actively with those various entities. Our target audience, as far as getting the word out, clearly is the member of the military family, the various members of the armed forces, and you know the school systems in the various states. Each, as you can imagine, each state's school system is huge, and there's getting that word down to the counselor level, principal level, in the various school system. Once a state becomes a member, is critical, because clearly, and that's once I came on board with the establishment of the commission, that's the reason we have our website, we publish a newsletter, we have brochures to get that information out and try to get our name out before the members of the military, number one, so that if they encounter a problem, they know where to come, and then we in turn get back to the various states. And I will say that we are not the be-all, end-all. My first call when we receive an issue here is to contact the commissioner of that respective state and try to get the two commissioners talking and let them work out the resolutions, because they, much better than I would ever know, the eccentricities of their respective state and their respective system. So they talk a language that some of us military guys don't when they start talking about exams and various types of exams that would qualify a student. And sometimes it's just merely a situation of misunderstanding of the terms. A student may have met the requirements for, and we talk in sending and receiving schools as opposed from calling states by name, but clearly that student may have met the requirements of this receiving state already in his sending state. It's just being called by a different name. That exam is called something different. And so those two commissioners have the opportunity to talk and then talk to the subject matter experts in their respective states, and then therefore many of the problems are alleviated before they escalate to our level anyway. We're merely facilitators. We work with the commissioners, with the superintendents, with the members of the military to try to resolve any significant issues that might be arising. So, again, we're the supporting staff for those commissioners and state councils out there.
Well, good for you. And you are familiar. I hope you are. And if you're not, I'll be happy to help you get in touch with the various major associations in education, like the NASSP, the Secondary Schools Principals, and you have the American Association of School Administrators, and even an Association for State Education Directors. Are you familiar with all of those? Are you tapping into them?
I'm familiar with the organizations, and in fact, we are currently attempting to put together a informational database that contains when those organizations meet, where they meet, and where we can get the information to them, where I can do on-site visits to interface with those respective individuals. And by the same token, what I guess you would call counterparts on the military side, you know, the morale support organizations, the Air Force, Army Times, those type of individual organizations that also have their target audience being the military. So it's a two-pronged effort to keep military individuals informed as well as civilian community. And you're exactly right. And any assistance we could get or any invitations we can get to come out and speak with these senior education folks or even, as again I said, at every level, any level. And I've often said if I can get a group of five together, I'll come and visit with them. We'll talk about this. And again, simply because we just want everybody to understand what it is we do, and it's amazing when I came on board here, you get out and you get started, and you said it early on in your program, you explain our mission, it is what we do, people to get that look in their eye like, why is it taking us so long to do this? This is such a very critical thing that we need to be doing. It's almost a no-brainer that we should have already done it, and I can't believe it hasn't been done. So everybody wants to get on board and do the right thing and make it happen. So that my job is very easy once I get out and get that audience of people to talk to.
And your phrasing just a minute ago, do the right thing, could not be more appropriate. I have to say, the other target audience, because we talk to a lot of people who out there who listen to our shows or who are teachers, et cetera, but they're also citizens of any given state. And they need to let their legislators know, the legislators at the state level, to be it their representatives or senators, or in Nebraska, the one unicameral state, just that one group. But they need to they need to let their legislators know that this is something that, that they should really be taking a good aim at and support it incredibly. And you can learn more at MIC3.net, MIC3.net. Okay, so, well, let me ask you then, what does the state have to do once they become a member?
Well, as I said earlier, the responsibility at that point is the appointing authority, for lack of a better term, whether it be the governor or the senior education official, as it's spelled out in their particular legislative language, selects a commissioner. And that commissioner serves as a member of our governing body. We have an annual conference annually. This will be our third, which coincidentally will be in Louisville, Kentucky this year. Our chairman of our executive committee is Mark Needham, the Kentucky commissioner, and we thought it would be very good planning to have it here in Kentucky. We had it in San Antonio last year, and it's the opportunity to bring that group of commissioners together to sit face-to-face and talk about issues, talk about any modifications to our rules or bylaws that might be necessary or indicated from the previous year to make this whole process work more smoothly. So that is the number one requirement. We ask that a commissioner from that state be appointed, and then a state council is established with various influential people in the educational communities, legislative and members of the legislature to actually conduct the business of the commission within that respective state. And then at that point, the educational role becomes very prevalent as they go out and, again, facilitate that process of spreading the word that we're, number one, that we're in existence in what we do. And again, we have the responsibility to burrow down to the lowest levels in each educational system to make sure the counselors, principals, teachers, everybody knows about what we do, number one, and that state is a member of the compact, and explain what the compact says and what it says that they need to do. And again, in most cases, this is already being done anyway. It's just being reinforced by legislative action by the respective members of the General Assembly. And as you said, it's ever so critical that they continue to support the operation and give feedback to those legislators that have worked so hard to make this happen. Because again, it is such a noble cause, and we want them to realize how successful we are.
And I have to say, again, you use good words, a noble cause. You know, so often these days, the politics, our legislators are driven by conservative, liberal, whatever the case may be. It causes a divide. Here's an issue that there is no divide. There's no divide. Okay, support your legislature and get them supporting this. It just makes sense, and make sure education knows it. I want to ask something, though. Let's use Mr. Needham as an example. What is his background? He's the commissioner for Kentucky. Is he an educator? Is he an ex-military guy? Is he a famous businessman or whatever? What is he?
Well, actually,
or what was he, I should say?
Well, he is somewhat of an anomaly, actually. He is a former military guy. He's an active duty retired colonel who was, his last duty assignment was here in Kentucky at Fort Knox, and then upon his retirement he became involved with Governor Beshear's staff, and consequently was appointed as our commissioner. Most of our commissioners are in the educational field. We do, our vice chairman of the board is kind of like me, has a dual background. She is also a retired brigadier general in the Hawaii National Guard, and she's also now has her doctorate and is an educator at the University of Hawaii too. So she has the advantage of knowing both sides of the coin, if you will, from the military perspective as well as the educational effect. Perspective, and that's the good thing about many National Guard folks, and in my case, having a dual career path, you have a civilian occupation as well as a military, so you gain several different perspectives as you look at things. But many and most of our commissioners are at least superintendents or higher in their state educational hierarchy.
So they get it. They understand the thing. I have to ask you, what was your civilian occupation, since you brought that up, General R. Black?
As about the same time I started out as a private in the Kentucky National Guard, I started a career with the Kentucky State Police, and I worked some 23 years in the Kentucky State Police and retired in the early 90s, and then after that I did a number of different things, and I served on the one of the governor's executive cabinets as his Secretary of Justice and Public Safety. So that, and then a couple other things before I got here. I was Commissioner of Alcohol Beverage Control. So I've been primarily a law enforcement focused civilian career while I was in the military.
Well, you have a very interesting background, Joe. Very interesting background indeed. I'm going to mention your name if they ever stop me for a traffic ticket if I'm ever in Kentucky. Is that okay?
What I tell my friends, that and about $2 will get you a cup of coffee about anywhere you want to go.
Okay, we have 36 states on board. We're running out of time pretty soon. You have 36 states on board. What's the next step? It's yours. Go ahead, General Arfleck. Tell us what we can do.
Well, as I said, once those states are on board and we have various operational committees in our hierarchy, and now the most prevalent is the Training and Education and Public Outreach Committee, and that their focus pretty much is described by their title. We want to educate everyone about what it is that we actually do, and so we're through various mechanisms and organizations that we've already talked about, trying to get inroads into those, get the word out to the members of the military through whatever mechanism we can use, as well as the civilian educational outlets. And so that is our primary goal, as well as the establishment of the various commissions within the states and the appointment of the commissioners. As you know, we had 29 new governors elected this year, so there is some turnover in the commission ranks, and we're working to ensure that those that were not reappointed, that we have new appointees in those positions. We're working toward planning and preparation for our national conference for the short term this November, where, again, with that many new commissioners coming on, we'll have a educational role with them, just giving them the opportunity to better understand what their role is as a commissioner and a member of my staff, and concert with the Education Training Committee now is working on a commissioner's training manual, and we will take some time at that training session to just kind of lay the groundwork for them, help them with the organization of their structure within their state, and send them, so they're better prepared to go out and do what it is that they want to do for this group of individuals that we so dearly need to serve. And as you said a while ago, I thought that was interesting. You're talking about the political dynamics in some of these legislation, and it's not conservative or liberal. This is a unifying factor as opposed to something that gets controversial. So, I mean, and again, we're still continuing to work with those members of the General Assembly as they change in some cases. We're answering questions. I mean, you know, as this thing is new and has evolved very quickly, and there are questions that continue to arise. And, you know, that's part of what we do here is try to troubleshoot any issues that we see before they become problematic. So it's there's a lot of things to do yet, but we're very excited about how quickly we've grown and where we're going and the potential that we have to get where we want to be. So we're in the process of developing a strategic plan, a long-range plan, not only for where we'll be 2 years from now, 5 years from now, 10 years down the road. And that's the good part about the military planning process. You understand how that works.
Well, General, thank you so much. This has been great, and I'm going to ask you right now over the air if you'll come back on. Your meeting is in November. We'll schedule a date. We'll talk via email and schedule a date. Can you come back on in September or so?
Well, absolutely. I'd be glad to, and I certainly appreciate the opportunity we've had today to talk.
Well, it's an honor having you here, and good luck with everything, and just keep sending me press releases for our website. I'm going to send you this show for your website on an MP3 and archive it on mine. So I'm looking forward to doing more with you and helping you out any way we can. You're doing a great job out there, General Norflag. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Larry, so much.
You're welcome, and you have a wonderful day. Thank you.
All right, you too. Bye. Right.
Bye. Good man. Good man. Serves his state, serves his country. Brigadier General retired Norman Arfleck, Executive Director at the Commission on Educational Opportunities for Military Children, based in Lexington, Kentucky. And it is, General Arfleck is right. It is complicated, but it is important. And it's important in every single state. The website is mic3.net, and go over there, learn more about it, see how you can affect these things. And no matter what level of education you are at, from student to parent to chief superintendent. Okay, it's important you understand how this affects and the effect of military children being transferred all over the place. It's lost in the battles of education, but it is so important. That's why we're so honored to have General R. Flack and his group with us, and they'll be back in September whenever they can, and we'll set up a date and have them back as they get ready for their November conference, MIC3.net. Today's show, thank you very much, was sponsored by Herf Jones Nystrom. We appreciate that so much. And visit their website at herfjonesnystrom.com. And don't miss their newest ed tech innovation, which is called Stratalogica. It's just powered by Google Earth, and it is it's amazing. Stratalogica.com. Create custom views, lessons, presentations, and send them to students or colleagues using Stratalogica's secure environment. You can try the new Stratalogica community to instantly access and copy content created by other educators. This is really cool stuff. And the HERF and created by other educators as well as the HERF Jones Nystrom staff. Visit Stratalogica, just like it sounds, Stratalogica.com, to start a free trial today. Stratalogica, Stratalogica.com. As they say, and you'll see this if you go over there, the learning is in the layers. I showed this to a few friends of mine who are current social studies teachers, and they just about went nuts. They couldn't believe it. Stratalogica, Herf Jones Nystrom, the learning is in the layers, okay? And so go over there, check it out. For social studies, it's the hottest thing out there. General, thanks so much. We'll be sending you all the stuff. You can listen to this show if you missed any part of it over at our website in just a few minutes, www.educationtalkradio.wordpress.com. What a wonderful week this has been. Next week, we're going to have the National School Board Association. We're going to have the California Charter Schools Association. We're going to have the National Association of Bilingual Educators. Looking forward to that. SIIA, the Software and Information Industry Association, their education wing. They'll be with us on Thursday. And our friends from the Partnership for 21st Century Skills will be with us on Friday. They'll all be talking about some great stuff. I'll keep you posted. You can get the full schedule at educationtalkradio.wordpress.com. Have a wonderful weekend. This is April 22nd, 2011. I'm Larry Jacobs. Thank you for listening to Education Talk Radio.